On House Bill 5026 and 5027, the capital project for OWEB. It's a public hearing. Let's lead off.
Mr. Chair, we have the Department of, we have Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. They're going to start out going over responding to the subcommittee prioritization, some discussions on performance measures, and then Lisa Pearson from Budget and Management will present the governor's recommended budget before they move into budget detail.
And since I haven't got a mouse in my pocket, I can't say we. Okay. Where's Nelson at?
On his way.
Frank Shields is sick today, so he's not coming. Senator Shields won't be here today. He's not feeling well, but Nelson's, I think, is way down. So.
Great.
Okay.
Well, Chair Bates.
Yes.
Members of the committee. For the record, Tom Beiler, director at the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to go through our Phase 2 budget presentation relating to OWEB's budget. In the interest of time, I'm going to try to move fairly quickly through the early parts of our presentation and focus the time that we have today on discussion of more detailed discussion of our budget. At the outset, though, I would like to just tee up for you several issues that we discussed as part of our Phase 1 presentation. First, one question that was asked of us and all the agencies in preparing for Phase 2 was, were there any responses to questions from Phase 1? We did not have any questions in the notes from my notes and staff. And in talking with Mr. Siebert, we concluded that there was no specific follow-up requested from us by the committee. In terms of the agency program prioritization, the committee did reshuffle our prioritization a little bit, not much. And we actually, from OWEB's perspective, are comfortable with the changes that the committee made. Essentially, the committee consolidated some of the items within our program prioritization, and that made a lot of sense from our perspective. And lastly, on performance measures, we are comfortable with the performance measures that were approved of from last fall. And in the discussion on our performance measures at our Phase 1 presentation, we did not get any direction to make any revisions to the list of performance measures that we had before us. I believe that Mr. Siebert has a potential measure that the committee may want to consider or has been considering, and I'll leave that up to the committee to determine how to move forward on that.
Paul, you want to show us that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the performance measure he's discussing is a performance measure relating to non-listing decisions for species that were considered to be listed, and this is something I believe that was discussed in Phase 1 and with the co-chair. So when we bring the recommendations on performance measures forward, you'll be seeing that measure as the only addition to the list.
Thank you. Ms. Pearson, please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'll be working from this document here. This is a very brief overview that will be followed by the agency with a lot more detail, so I'll move quickly. You turn to page 2. There's a chart showing the Natural Resources Policy Area. On the left-hand side are total funds, and on the right-hand side are general fund and lottery funds. OWEB represents about 5% of the natural resources total funds and 17% of the natural resources general fund lottery funds. But OWEB only has, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board only has lottery funds, so there's no general fund involved. Then the next 4 slides show different views of the budget, starting with, on page 3, the funding types. Lottery funds for Major 66 dedications represent the largest category of funding, followed by federal funds, which is primarily the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds, and then other funds, which include such things as salmon license plate revenues. Moving to page 4, there's a view of the budget as seen from the different program areas. There are three program areas. Operations is slightly larger than capital. Operations is where you will find the operations portion of the Major 66 funding. Capital is the capital portion of the Major 66 funding. And then the research and development funding is interest earnings on lottery funds. And those are used for evaluation and assessment. Moving to page 5, there's a view of the budget proposed by the governor by expenditure category. The largest category by far is special payments. This reflects the fact that this agency is primarily a granting agency. It administers grants and it lets grants and it follows up on grants. So 94% of the budget is in fact special payments. And then that's followed by personal services and services and supplies. On page 6, there is a table showing the budget information over time, starting with the 1999-2001 actuals and following through to the governor's proposal for 2005-07. And you'll see that over time, general fund was removed from this agency. Other funds has bounced around a little bit. Early on, there were some timber tax revenues and also some ODFW license fees, but those went away. So now it's primarily the salmon license plate revenues. Looking at the changes from 2003-05 legislatively approved budget to the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget, you'll see some changes in other funds and federal funds that's really due to carry over from one biennium to the next. And there was a bit of a bump in Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds earlier in this decade, which helped contribute to some of the carryover funding in terms of the size of the amount that was available and what might be carried over. On page 7, major policy issues include such things as population growth effects. These affect land and water use. Performance and outcomes. The question here is mainly how do you measure results and success? And then expectations. Different Oregonians have different expectations and hopes for this agency and what it's supposed to accomplish. And that has
been. So, are you going to put this bullet point on every one of these things you do in every policy area?
Expectations.
Yeah. Madam Chair, you're correct that this would be, you know, a general statement about anything, wouldn't it? But the good thing is about this particular agency is that there aren't so many terribly focused problems or issues that we didn't have that much to say about them. On page 8, there are investments for addressing these major policy issues, and that includes continuing the Major 66 grant accountability effort that started in the 2003-05, or was funded in the 2003-05 biennium. And it also adds resources for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds to have a position dedicated to accountability for those funds as well. There are resources added for the independent multidisciplinary science team, and that will provide more funding for team member time and compensation, as well as services and supplies, and research assistance. The Lower Columbia River Estuary Project is funded at a level that is equal to the state of Washington's. In 2003-05, there was a discrepancy between Washington State's level of funding and Oregon's. This is a program where Washington and Oregon have historically tried to have the same level of funding, and then that matches federal funds. On page 9, there are some resources for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund grants. There's also increased resources thanks to a healthy lottery fund for capital grants. And there are resources dedicated to validation monitoring, and that basically is verifying that Major 66 has been, projects have been completed according to contract. Reductions are really limited to statewide savings that result from such initiatives as the Smart Buy program. And then on page 10, there's a fee and revenue issue in that the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund level that we had anticipated in the governor's recommended budget turned out not to be the level that we actually are going to receive for federal fiscal year 2005. After we put the budget to bed and to the printers, we learned that there would be about $1 million decrease or lesser amount from what we had expected. And then in addition to that, there would be some earmarks and rescissions. And that means that we really can expect about $2 million less of fungible or available Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds from what we had originally anticipated in the governor's recommended budget. And, of course, that has some implications. There is one technical adjustment. In this case, it is a reclassification of a position from an accounting technician 3 to an accountant 1. It was reviewed by our Human Resources Services Division, but not in time for the governor's recommended budget. So subsequent to that, we learned that that was, in fact, appropriate, and we would recommend that the subcommittee consider that reclassification. And with that, I've completed my overview. As I said, the agency will be giving details in a moment, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Questions or comments?
Just one comment.
Representative
Krieger has been really concerned about the multidisciplinary team, or whatever that thing is called, independent multidisciplinary science, adding resources. Just for the record.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to clarify also. Just want to clarify that the governor's recommended budget, while it included revenue from the addition of line games, included no expenditure limitation for any of those dollars in his budget. So there is an additional $9 million as of the last forecast that the committee and the chambers will be looking at making investments with.
Thank you.
We have to pay capital gains on that revenue? Forgive me, Madam Chair.
It must have been a Florida baby.
I can tell you missed lunch.
No, I'm not going to go in. I've already caused enough trouble.
Okay, let's go back to Mr. Byler, and if you'd like to take us through the Phase 2 budget presentation, we would be very appreciative.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. I will... Here on our PowerPoint presentation, you'll see the four chapters of our presentation, agency overview and discussion of the governor's recommended budget with the following more detailed discussion and a brief discussion on service delivery and cost containment. In the interest of time, I'll try to move through these first two points as quickly as I can.
Great. We are seriously behind because of the floor schedule. So,
so if I move too fast, and please stop me if you have any questions along the way. I'll go quickly through this slide right here, agency overview. we're doing well. Our mission, quite simply, is to create and maintain healthy watersheds that support natural habitats and support thriving communities and strong economies. Most simply, what we do and what we emphasized in Phase 1 is that we're a grant program. We're not a large agency. We're pretty small. And our primary function is our grant program and operating our grant program. And essentially what we do is invest in local communities who are doing the work, essentially, out in the field in different parts of the state to restore watershed health. And what we're involved with is a fairly unique program within state government where we're not regulatory, we're incentive-based. And these investments that OWEB provides through our grant program are the fuel that runs the engine for these local communities. The other thing that we do has to do with the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, which really is the foundation and structure for this locally based incentive program. And we are not only serving that function of getting the dollars on the ground for these local groups, but we also have functions within the family of natural resources agencies as a coordinating entity dealing with monitoring information and reporting actions. Our importance to Oregonians first and foremost through our restoration and protection of the watersheds, the investments that we do. These investments are also important for their social content. We build local partnerships. The money that we offer through our grants are helping local communities, often with interests at the table that represent quite diverse perspectives and backgrounds, do the job their own way to help watershed health and improve water quality and restore the habitat that support fish and wildlife communities. And lastly, our investments have both near-term and long-term benefits for local economies. In the near term, we're looking at grants that go to projects that are spent locally. These projects are funding local labor and local services and supplies to put these projects on the ground. In the long term, our hope is that these projects will result in a watershed health that will be able to support a variety of fish and wildlife species that will not be subject to the Federal Endangered Species Act and help us pull out of issues relating to the Clean Water Act, which tend to be a drag on communities and help or hurt communities from being able to make long-term planning decisions for their local economies. Real briefly, on OWEB board, our board is a large board, 17-member board, and the importance of this board, in my view, is the diversity that it represents. We have 5 public members, but we also have 5 members who also sit on other state natural resources agency boards. We have members who are from federal agencies that have a stake in what we're doing, as well as OSU Extension, which certainly has an interface with what we do. And what makes OWEB somewhat unique amongst all the state agencies that deal with natural resources issues is that we bring all those disciplines under one roof with OWEB, and we benefit from the expertise and experience of the folks that are sitting at the table. The board is the entity that awards grants. They make the final decision on grants, and they also approve and adopt rules, the administrative rules for the agency. I won't go through this in any detail other than just to point out this is our organizational structure. We have 4 sections within our agency. Grant administration, this is the group that really shepherds our grant process. Grant fiscal, which are the numbers folks and deal with our payments on our grant program. Monitoring and reporting section, which deals with a lot of our Oregon plan interface in terms of coordinating monitoring with the different agencies and on a regional level, as well as dealing with our reporting elements for the Oregon plan. And then agency administration, which is essentially the director's office. And, of course, we've got our fingers in all those other areas, but we also are the direct board contact and do a lot of the intergovernmental work and work with the legislature and the governor's office. So, moving into our budget. As Ms. Pearson related, our budget is divided into 2 primary sources of revenue, ballot measure 66, measure 66 funds. These are constitutionally dedicated funds to salmon restoration, water quality improvement, and federal funds from the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. These are appropriated annually and are targeted toward salmon recovery and planning related to federally listed areas under the Endangered Species Act. This next slide is the total revenue pie, and it gives you a sense of the sources of those revenue. As you can see, we have significant revenue sources under Measure 66 through capital and operations and research and development, which is a statutorily designated source of Measure 66 funds that is built off of the interest of the other two, the capital and the operations pieces of Measure 66. We also have the federal funds and the other funds, as Lisa mentioned, the carry forward and the other funds, including license plates funding. This is another take on the total revenue pie. And It shows how the governor's recommended budget would propose to allocate those revenues. At the top left, the bluish purple piece is Measure 66 operations and capital funds that go directly to other agencies, $25 million. To the right of that, you see the line game revenue that was mentioned earlier. This has not been proposed for expenditure limitation to any agency. There's expected to be $9 million of new revenue for that. There are also a couple of ending balances relating to Measure 66. And then at the bottom, where I want to focus our discussion for the remainder of our time, is the $73 million that is the governor's recommended budget for OWEB.
Representative Schaffler.
On mine, then, I don't have the line games broken out. Is that correct? I didn't turn the page. Forgive me, Madam Chair. I'll start trying to pay better attention.
That's the bell goes off.
Ignore me.
The next, if I may, the next slide then looks at that $73 million, the governor's recommended budget for OWEB, and shows the fund type distribution for that. Lottery funds of $43 million, federal funds of 27, from which $10 million will get passed through to other agencies. It also includes committed carry forward, essentially dollars that have already been allocated or distributed through the grant process and they awarded to grants and not yet spent, essentially, because of the nature of some projects or multiple year projects. And plus that $27 million does not account for the $2 million discrepancy that Ms. Pearson referenced early in the discussion. This, another way to look at the $73 million amount, and this time by budget category, and the point here is that the personal services and services supplies are what fund OWEB's operations. And it's a pretty small portion of the total pie, as you can see, roughly 6% of the total. The special payments are those dollars that either go to other agencies or go to our grant program or go to the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership or the IMST, the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team. This is a breakout of the special payments, which I basically just ran through for you, but this will give you a sense of the detail on that. Again, we've got significant grant funds. We've got special payments that in the form of federal dollars that would go to other agencies, the IMST, LCREP, Watershed Council support at $2.4 million. Those are Measure 66 non-capital funds. Now to move into a discussion of our program and services, we're breaking this into two primary areas for this discussion. One is the grant program, which is, in essence, a discussion of the types of grants that we offer through our grant program. And then the second part will be a more detailed focus on our agency operations. The grant program essentially, as I mentioned, is the primary function of the agency. It's a competitive grant program, and we break our grant program into two units, the capital grant program and non-capital. This is driven by the Constitution, Measure 66, which earmarks 65% of the lottery dollars to go to on-the-ground projects. These are primarily restoration and protection grants, also our small grant program, which serve the same purposes. The distinction there is that this is a separate program where we provide funds that are distributed locally rather than through OWEB board decisions. The idea is that we can gain some efficiencies by distributing these dollars through our small grants. Those grants are capped at no more than $10,000 per grant. And the idea is that we're allowing those local groups through 28 different geographic units across the state to get these dollars on the ground more quickly, and that we're honoring their expertise and knowledge in terms of where the best uses of those dollars can go. The non-capital grant piece of our grant program focuses on very important functions that complement the on-the-ground projects. Those are for monitoring, watershed enhancement, technical assistance, watershed council support, and education and outreach. These are all purposes that are identified either in Measure 66 in the Constitution or in statute, and are critical for our work so that we can understand the effectiveness of the projects that we're funding through our capital grants program, and that we can make sure that we have the organizational ability, the infrastructure out there locally to put those projects on the ground. Our partners, these are the critical players in our view, and these are the folks that we work with on a regular basis to implement those local projects. They range from private ag and forest landowners, folks from urban areas, watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, municipalities, business and industry, public interest groups, tribes, as well as state and federal resource agencies. We work with these folks on a regular basis. This map gives you a sense of a part of what we've done over the last 5 years on just on our restoration grants. And what's important to what I want to point out that we feel is important is that we're touching all parts of the state with the grant work that we do. And I also want to point out here that if you look at the map, you'll see the green sections. Those are public lands. The darker green, darker shaded areas, the lighter shaded areas are private lands. And a critical function that we provide throughout the state is that we're able to get dollars out on the ground in private lands in a way that doesn't happen with federal projects generally. So we're really serving a very important function in that respect. Budget drivers and environmental factors for our grant program. The key here is limited non-capital funding. As I mentioned, there are the two grant categories, the capital dollars, which fund the on-the-ground projects, and then the non-capital, which fund the monitoring, research, assessment work, and local capacity. Last biennium, OWEB did not have any non-capital funding as it started the biennium. And we weren't able to fund a couple of grant cycles early in the biennium for monitoring or assessment work or technical assistance. And that sets back, that's a setback for a lot of the local groups that rely on those dollars to help round out the work that they're doing on in the watershed. The governor's recommended budget would provide roughly $6 million in federal funds for those purposes, and that would be a great improvement. The main message that I want to convey to the committee is that the capital dollars are fantastic and they're very helpful, but we need to have complementary non-capital funding for us to do our job as well as we want to. The option packages here, non-capital grants, $6.5 million of federal funds. Again, the caveat here is that, as Ms. Pearson suggested at the beginning of the presentation, $2 million, the governor's recommended budget anticipated $2 million more in federal funds than we actually have, and so that those will have to be adjusted somewhere. Capital grants, $34.5 million, which is just would be absolutely fantastic. This does not include the line game revenue, of course. That was not given expenditure limitation or proposed for expenditure limitation in the governor's recommended budget. This is a great number from our perspective. This is about $10 million more than we had in the previous biennium and would be fantastic for us to be able to offer this level of funding for on-the-ground projects going into the next biennium. Package 090, these are analyst adjustments. These are federal dollars that are earmarked in the governor's recommended budget for other agencies. These have to go through a board process, OWEB board process, because we are the recipient of this federal grant and are responsible for the agency is responsible for the final designation of those as a pass-through. Moving into grant operations, this gets into the nuts and bolts of what we do at OWEB. And I'll start off with our grant administration. This is the group of staff that are focused on soliciting, reviewing, evaluating, and awarding grants, and we also manage the grants. This is an incredibly important function of what we do. As I mentioned, all grants are competitively selected and awarded through the board based on criteria established in administrative rule. We have five regional review teams and three statewide teams that we operate with over 100 volunteer application reviewers through the course of the biennium. This current biennium, we reviewed over 785 applications. And we have the ongoing management of over 900 active grants. The grant administration staff are split up. Half the staff are in Salem, and we also have staff whose responsibilities are in the field. One of them is housed in our Salem office. The other four are covered geographic units that you see here in this map. As you can see that some of our folks cover vast geographic territory, these are very important positions for us. They're the ones who are able to provide a regular personal interface with folks, our local stakeholders out in the field. They do a lot of helpful work in terms of helping folks understand which grants they need to apply for, help them understand how to apply for the grants, help them in terms of implementing these grants and monitoring the effectiveness of those grants. Very important functions. Our Salem staff, they oversee the grant review process and provide the oversight for our regional liaisons, and also spend a lot of time on the everyday management of open grants and working in our small grant program, which has turned out to be a steady flow of business on our end as well. I'm not going to walk you through this in any detail other than to have you look at this in the sense and get the understanding that this is full-time business for us in terms of our grant process. At the bottom, you'll see this represents the upcoming biennium, and we have grants that are ongoing throughout the biennium. It's full-time business for this staff. The top arrow, the blue arrow that cuts across, is our small grant program. While these are awarded on a local basis, we do a lot of processing of payments and a lot of work with the different local teams that award these grants. It is a full-time, year-round work for our staff. In the middle, you'll see, middle right, you'll see council support. We award grants to help the capacity, the administrative support for our local watershed councils once a biennium. We're looking at later this month, the board will be considering council support grants for the upcoming biennium. And it's a very important grant award that provides the administrative support and the local capacity for these groups to be able to apply for grants and to help implement them. These are the folks that are working with local landowners to make projects work. And at the bottom is our regular, what we call our regular grant program, and it involves restoration grants, it involves monitoring, technical assistance, education, and outreach. They're all folded into a grant cycle. We essentially will go through four of these award cycles through the two-year biennium. Budget drivers and environmental factors, and you'll see some repeating of these factors because they really cover our whole agency, and because our agency is focused on a real core mission of through our grant program. But accountability and reporting, we are focused on both state performance measures and reporting requirements as well as federal reporting requirements through the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. We're finding that we're in a situation now where we're responding to new performance measures that were developed over this biennium with help from the legislature. And we also report on the Oregon plan. We have enhanced or additional requirements with respect to our federal funding measuring performance measures and reporting that we are working closely with NOAA Fisheries on. We're also very keen on making sure that our actions are tied to showing how we're making progress in our investments. That is very important, and I'll talk about that as a theme that that all of our different sections are focused on. We're also facing increasing workload and more complex issues. We carry a big ongoing workload with our active grants, but our grants themselves, the individual grants, are getting more and more complex and sophisticated, requiring longer implementation time and also requiring more work in terms of our review and coordination as after grants are awarded. We have two option packages, I believe, on this within this area. One is package 110, and we just focus here on the boldface language because we have another position here that I'll talk about in a few minutes related to another section within our agency. But for this purposes, we are looking at this package accounts for our grant program manager. This is a very important position within our agency, as you might imagine, given the importance of our grant program. It is, we're asking for this position to become permanent. It's been a limited duration position, and it's been within the agency essentially since the second year of our existence, the year 2000. We see this position as having ongoing need, and the reason we're bringing that forward is to make that transition from a limited duration to permanent. The next position is an Office Specialist 2. What we're asking for here is a federally funded position, moving what is currently a half-time Office Specialist 1 position to a full-time Office Specialist 2 position. This position would help us respond to our ongoing and increasing workload, would cover a lot of the administrative functions within this section of our agency, the data entry, reception functions, copying, file work, and I think what's important about this position is that they will cover a lot of ground within that section and free up a lot of our other staff, the field liaisons and our policy folks within that agency to focus more on their customer service with the direct contacts with our stakeholders rather than focusing on copying a lot of materials or doing a lot of the filing and administrative related work. Moving into our grant fiscal section, this section works hand in glove with the previous section, our grant administration section. But this is our numbers crew. These are the folks who process payments. They review all the grant agreements for the appropriate use of the funds. They offer training to grantees who may not have the level of experience on grant-related matters. They, too, are managing a large load of active grants, the 900 grants, and this group helps us make sure that we're in compliance with state and federal funding requirements for the use of these funds and help us with our budgeting. Again, accountability and increasing workload and complexity of issues are drivers for this section. Reporting and accountability are very important. OWEB handles a significant amount of public funds, and a lot of funds go through our grant program, and this is the group that makes sure that those dollars are being used in as intended. They also are the group that works most closely with our auditors. We get annual and biennial audits by the Secretary of State in terms of the use of the Measure 66 funds. The one position within this section that we have an option package for would move a half-time accounting tech 3 to a full-time accountant 1. This simply would help us to meet our program needs within this section. this would give what is a very small section under the governor's recommended budget for this next fight, and we'd have four staff. What's important for this section is that they are able to be versatile in terms of what they do. And having an accountant one would allow for a sharing of different program responsibilities within that small staff, which just makes us more effective in what we do. It helps us to respond or to not get too set back if we have illness or if someone's away for some time. We're able to shuffle responsibilities among the staff in a much more effective way. This staff person will also be instrumental and help us reconcile the federal database that we report to with our Oregon database as well.
Senator Nielsen.
So these are biennial figures, and do they include all benefits too?
Chair Morgan, Senator Nielsen, yes, I believe they do. This would be funded by federal dollars as well. Moving into our monitoring and reporting section, this group, again, is focused primarily on making sure that we're effective in using these, that our program is effective, that we're helping us to measure on a project level basis, that these projects are doing the work that they're intended to do, helping us also understand the effectiveness on a broader scale. This group helps us track our expenditures, is a key player in terms of our putting together our biennial report on the Oregon plan. They help us track our performance measures and chair the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team. This is a group of state and federal agencies that oversee the monitoring functions within the Oregon Plan, and provide a lot of technical assistance as well to our Oregon Plan partners. Again, accountability and increasing workload are the key drivers for us in terms of this program. This program is going to be instrumental in terms of helping us to understand the effectiveness of our investments. And again, considering the Measure 66 and federal dollars that are invested, that we're investing on the ground through the grant program, we take very seriously the responsibility for us to be able to understand where those dollars are going and what kind of results we're getting in those investments. This program is critical for us in that respect. The option package associated with this program is the restoration validation monitoring position. I call it effectiveness monitoring. This position would be a permanent position funded by Measure 66 capital dollars, which is fairly unusual. Usually we see non-capital dollars for the fund positions, but this position is tied directly to specific projects that are happening on the ground, and the whole point of this position is to help us understand, of all the different types of projects that we fund, what are the types of projects that are most effective? Where are they most useful? What parts of the state? These are the types of information that the board will benefit from to help us be more strategic and develop priorities into the future so that we're making sure that we're getting the biggest bang for our buck with our future investments. And lastly, our agency administration. This is essentially the director's office. We manage all aspects of the agency. Provide coordination with our partners, interface with the legislature and the governor's office. We are the entity that provides the most direct support for the OEB board, and we also are the area that, or the part of the agency that coordinates our legal issues with the Department of Justice. Again, accountability and increasing workload are the key budget drivers for us within this section. And again, our performance measures and reporting requirements are very important. Our need for accessible data to support those performance measures and the reporting requirements are of increasing importance. The other piece of this program that's very important is this is where our public information and outreach functions lie, and making sure that we have public awareness of the opportunities that OWEB presents through our grant program is an important function, increasingly important as we find more and more lottery dollars available for projects on the ground. The first option package related to this section within our agency is Package 110. This would be funded by, this is a position that an information systems specialist, 5, which in layperson's terms is a computer person. That's the way I prefer to look at it. We have database and reporting needs. We've embarked on a process of updating our database. We need upgrading to our database to enable us to be able to perform our functions at a higher level. This will help us in terms of, in a number of ways, in terms of our being able to provide speedy responses to information requests. This will provide, ultimately our goal is to provide online applications for grantees so that they'll be able to apply for their grants by jumping onto our website and downloading a document. It will create some efficiencies for us that we're not able to achieve right now, both externally and internally. Internally, the database will cover all of our different program areas, both fiscal and the grant program, and will help us to be able to for example, more easily distribute materials of all the grants that we receive. We receive scores of grant applications each of our grant cycle. Yeah, to the extent that we can move grantees or the applicants to these online forms, we'll be able to distribute these materials without having to go through a lot of copying. We'll be able to move these through to our grant review teams through electronic means. This is a very, very important position for our agency in order for us to be able to make sure that we have the data resources and tools available to us to meet our reporting needs and to accomplish the outcomes that are part of our performance measures from both a state and federal perspective. This will put us in a very good position to be able to meet those needs. One more point here.
Senator Bates?
Just jump back here to your these two jobs here. About $100,000 a year and about how much the other ones here?
These are biennial numbers, right?
I know, that's a peg in half.
And the principal contributor one position are you looking at, or the one yeah. Brief prior?
Look back there.
This is the
executive position is $100,000 a year.
Let me, yes. It's well, that is an existing position. It's currently limited duration.
Limited position, but it's $100,000 a year.
The grant program manager is $230,000.
Biennial.
For biennial, yes.
Guys pay well.
Chair?
Representative Schaffer.
That's their annual wage, or how much goes into funding that position?
This is the biennial item for that class of a manager. So it would include overhead. It's not just salary.
Thank you. What is the salary? Since we're looking at this, what is the salary of that position? Annual salary. You know?
45.
Per month.
$7,200 a year
is the gross.
Thank you. That's
about
right. What's important about this package, if I may, Madam Chair, is that what we're asking for in terms of this grant program manager, again, a critical function for our agency to oversee this program, is to move this from a limited duration position to a permanent position. The ISS 5 position, the database position, is limited duration, or it would be a permanent position. This is shifting what has been a limited duration position, what is an ISS 7 that we have had in the past, we have currently. We're moving that position. We're refocusing, basically, that position. We want to move the ISS 7 to this ISS 5. The ISS 7 position was more of a policy position, or a broader strategic position with respect to data management, whereas this ISS 5 position is more of a nuts and bolts person, someone who will help us with our upgrades of our database, someone who will help with the maintenance of the database, someone who will help us with our day-to-day needs in terms of our personal computers and the software and hardware needs. We don't have that capacity at the moment. So that position is very important for us in terms of our day-to-day needs. Will also be very important for us to be able to make sure that we can so that we can meet our performance measure and reporting needs over time and make sure that we're providing the kind of data access to the public so they can understand what opportunities and what we've done with our funds over the past.
Yeah, to drive this home, how about describing both of these positions in terms of what they would mean for Representative Schaffler and I in terms of the Johnson Creek watershed area? What are these people doing for us at that local level? And, sure. And how does it enhance what's going on there?
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, with respect to the grant program manager, the grant program manager, again, oversees the functions of all of our grant cycles, manages the staff that we have that do the legwork on these. Without the grant program manager, you might see a less coordination within our grant program. And what we would find by maintaining this position would be business as usual, which we feel is a good program. We've learned a lot over the years. We continue to learn as we go. Our program continues to evolve, and we get feedback from all of our stakeholders with each grant cycle. And for example, with this particular during this biennium, we listened to those folks and we did some rulemakings to improve our grant program. So that's a constant loop that we have where we're looking to improve our process. Our grant program manager is an important part of that and oversees and steers that program and has done a fine job. With respect to the ISS 5, this position is going to provide the ability through an upgraded database for the public to have greater access to information about what we do and the investments that we've made so that someone from the Johnson Creek Watershed Council would be able to do a query go onto our website and do a query to find out what types of grants or investments have been made in the past, figure out where the dollars have gone and what types of projects have happened. We also are looking into the future to have an online interface for our applications so that someone from the Johnson Creek Watershed Council would be able to go onto our website, tap into our grant program, and be able to apply for a grant through an electronic application process, which would create greater efficiencies for everyone as well.
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Representative Shields, please continue.
That's okay. Madam Chair, I'm simply wanting to comment that if each of us followed that presentation, I think we would see at the local level that if we want things to go forward with some degree of progress, because you're working with volunteers out there, they deserve to get answers to their questions and, you know, to move forward in projects that they're putting a lot of volunteer time into. So I kind of wanted him to describe it in terms of what I got out of it as a senator.
Sure.
Representative Shelton.
I just want to clarify for the record. I knew 230,000 divided by 2. I assumed and believed 230,000 by 2 was not the annual salary of the individual, and I wanted to clarify that included all the expenses. And they're also, I'd imagine, qualify for this position. You have to be an expert at computers and databases and communication and all that stuff, too. I'd imagine if they're college-educated folks. So I didn't mean to imply that we were spending too much money there. Just for the record. Thank you.
And colleagues, I think that the push-pull on this budget has always been to maintain the least amount of bureaucracy overhead around the program as possible, so the most possible money can actually go out in grants. And I think one of the challenges that we have is to find that balance that you described between how to make the program effective and efficient and how to get the most money out on the ground.
Senator.
Didn't I just hear that it's only about 6% administration costs? Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm sure.
Representative Kraft.
Tom, I just did some quick math on my handy-dandy cell phone calculator here. And both of those positions, if you remove the salaries out of those dollars, then you're left with about 63% of those dollars are, or the salaries rather, 63% of those total dollars. So what's the breakdown then on the other 40 or 38% to 37% in terms of how much of that goes to S&S, how much of it is overhead, how much of it is PERS, how much of it is taxes you pay on behalf of the employee?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, I am not qualified to answer that question.
Okay.
And I've just been given a document that makes my eyes pop out of my head.
Credit for being honest.
Cindy Cry here might be able to give you a better sense of it.
Okay, as far as for the
record,
Cindy Cry, the fiscal manager, the PEME, we have $31,000 in S&S costs, and for the ISS-5, we've got $13,000. The PEME has a substantial amount in travel, and
how much?
There's $7,500.
They have to travel a lot, though, in their job.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, yes, and we really want to emphasize that, given that this person is overseeing those five different regions. If you remember the map that we showed, where we have staff housed trying to provide the delivery of services for our grant program, we also try to make sure that as we go through our review, you might remember that we have application review teams with 100 volunteers from state and federal agencies that are helping us, and we go through a lot of travel in terms of meeting with those review groups as we go through our different cycles. So there's a fair amount of travel, more than you would see normally.
And so, Madam Chair, services and supplies, that's about 15 grand a year, roughly. 31K for the entire biennium. When you define services and supplies for this type of a position, what are we buying for $31,000 over the biennium
well,
services and supplies?
Of course, we have rent, and okay. This position also was budgeted to have space up in Portland, so we've got $9,000 budgeted for rent, which I think will probably be reduced. We've got phone costs at $2,400 for biennium, miscellaneous costs at $2,500, a new computer for $2,000 because you have to turn over their computers every 3 or 4 years. Then that should come up to about $30,000.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, with travel and $31,000, you're somewhere around $39,000. Added to then doing the math here, so we're at about $184,000 out of $230,000. Is that right?
Actual salary is $145,000,
right.
And
then
the OPE would be the difference between $198,000 and $145,000. I can't do the numbers in my head.
You know, what might be a straighter line here is if you could just summarize this information for both of those positions and bring it into us tomorrow. Would that work fine?
Thank you.
And I think where Representative Krupp wants to know is what the components of both of those numbers are in terms of how much salary and then the breakout on the loading.
Chair Morgan, we'll provide that information tomorrow.
Thank you.
Moving along to the next option package within the agency administration, this is for a new position that would be funded by federal funds. It would be a limited duration position, principal contributor one, which would deal with agencies' outreach and education or outreach and information, public information needs. This is a position that is trying to respond to both constitutional and statutory guidance as to what the OEP program and the Oregon plan is trying to achieve. We have not had a person in this position at least since about the year 2000-2001. This person would be helpful in terms of being able to coordinate and communicate with our local groups and get the word out about what OWEB is doing, help folks understand the opportunities that are available to them through our program. Just an example we have through our Oregon plan infrastructure with other agencies, we have an education and outreach team. OWEB staffs that team, and we staff it with someone who doesn't have a lot of expertise in this area. And we're able to make do with that, but we feel like we could do a better job of helping folks understand the work that we're doing and the opportunities that are out there for this program.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
Can you this may be a really stupid question. And I guess I've been around long enough not to be afraid to ask stupid questions. I don't know. But this is a federally funded program. Does that mean that they're making some reports back that somebody at the federal level is interested in, or why is it federally funded?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, OWEB has received in the past and will likely continue to receive some federal funds through the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. And yes, indeed, there are some strings attached to those funds in terms of reporting progress and the uses of those funds. This position would contribute to that, but would not be limited to those functions. This position would be, while they would be focused on that as part of their responsibilities, they would be helping OWEB report and distribute information relative to our actions and broadly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Another option package. This is a program adjustment actually for the Water Resources Department, who helps us, hearkening back to Chair Morgan's comment about how our agency is fairly slim and lean. We don't have a lot of staff and overhead. We benefit from one of our neighbors, the Water Resources Department, who covers our human resources needs as well as our accounting through our operations of our agency and our purchasing. And this option package is responding to, I guess, really what is the general trend in terms of our increasing workload. This would allow them to meet our needs in terms of carrying out their functions to help us in our human resources and purchasing administrative functions. The only comment here is this is a package 090, an analyst adjustment relative to OWEB's part of the Smart Buy process that is operated through the Department of Administrative Services. And lastly, would our service delivery and cost containment. Four areas that I'll just briefly run through. Our grant program, these are some of the things that we've done over the current biennium in recent years to improve the delivery of our services. One is we have made continual changes to our grant review processes through rulemakings As I mentioned earlier, we're constantly listening to feedback from the public and our stakeholders to find ways to improve our process. One thing that we've done recently is folded into our process opportunities to interact more directly with our applicants before we submit recommendations to the board for their decisions, and to do site visits for potential projects so that we can better understand the nature of the projects involved. We also, as I mentioned, are looking at improving our database up through upgrades that will provide more quicker response time for questions that we want to get through our grant program, and provide ultimately online electronic grant applications for our folks. We will be also we also did cross training for our fiscal staff, again a very small staff, and to provide to make sure that we have continuity over the course of a biennium. We are much better able to provide good delivery of services if our staff are able to serve multiple functions within that unit. In terms of public information and outreach improvements, we strive to have our board meet throughout the state. That is a great way for us to interface with local stakeholders, and most of our meetings do take place outside of Salem. We also have, through a cooperative effort, funded the Institute for Natural Resources out of OSU to put together what are what I refer to as web portals. These essentially are our web-based data points for the public. We've done two pilots with the Institute for Natural Resources, one in the Willamette and one on the North Coast. This provides easy-to-use data access for folks to be able to get information not only about what OEB has done in the state of Oregon through the Oregon Plan, but it provides a nexus for information relative to all of our federal and state and other partners in terms of the work they're doing, natural resources work that they're doing. Payment processing improvements. We've streamlined our payments process. We're now turning around our payments within 30 days, which is helping, certainly helping all of our local folks and the grant recipients. And lastly, in performance measure improvements, we have worked with the legislature, and we have now a slate of performance measures that are more outcome-focused. They're fairly new. We received them last October, I believe, is when they were approved. And we're in the process now of making sure that we can report good results and track the information and outcomes effectively over time. We're also in the process of a continual process of working with the federal government on performance measures for the use of the federal funds as well.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
What are those performance measures you have to report to the federal government?
Madam Chair, what are they?
What are the performance measures you have to report to the federal government with?
Off the top of my head, I can't tell you the details, but we'll see if we have these. I may be able to refer to them through here. I'm not sure if we've included them in our book or not. We have a performance measure chapter in the budget book, the green binder that we provided as part of our Phase 1 presentation. Okay. I've just heard that they were not finalized. In fact, they may not be final now. They're in the process of being finalized with the federal government. We are expecting to see something this summer. I can get some performance measures to you that were developed in 2003, but you should just know that they're subject to revision based on the final federal performance measures that are due this summer.
Are there any parallels to the ones that we're asking you for?
Yes, I believe so. And they're not fresh in my mind right now, but I know that they are very much focused on the Federal Endangered Species Act and the progress in terms of recovery and delisting, very much along those lines.
If I may briefly, for the record, Ken Beerley, Deputy Director, the performance measures, draft performance measures that we've been reporting on for the last 2 years for the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund to the National Marine Fisheries Service have focused on outcomes. How many miles of stream are available for spawning? when you remove culverts, how many miles of stream you're planning riparian habit or is restoring riparian habitats, those kinds of outcomes, rather than the more eventual outcomes, delisting, et cetera, that are in state performance measures. So they are looking in the same direction, but they are measuring kind of activities and outcomes as opposed to ultimate outcomes.
Madam Chair, I mean, the question arises in my mind is, how do we know this is working? And the performance outcomes I've seen before they were changed were kind of, couldn't get my teeth into them. These are, the new ones look a little better. I don't know if you're measuring quality of water streams, you know, turbidity, water flow, temperature, you know, pollutants or non-pollutants, you know, repair and habitat improved, miles of stream for spawning beds obviously are better. What's the smolt population look like? I mean, all the things are sort of objective you could measure. If you can tell if you're getting anywhere, do you have that data somewhere and just, it's just sort of too low down for us to see it, or is that really being collected or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, there's lots of data, and we're busy collecting it on all sorts of fronts. OWEB's role is to fund those entities, other agencies, and local groups who are doing the work that's collecting the data. What you're talking about is something that's been very difficult, and we are continuing to strive to better understand how we can measure our progress. We've made some good progress in that, developing that understanding through our effort this current biennium on the coast with the coastal coho assessment, where we've put our information to the test, so to speak, in a way that we hadn't before. And I would expect that we're learning from that, and I think we'll be more strategic in how we can make future investments of resources, both through OWEB grants as well as agency actions on the coast through that analysis. It's still a very difficult analysis to go through, very difficult. But our long-term approach, the governor's office is taking, is to move that same kind of analysis that we did on the coast with the coho into other parts of the state, and OWEB will be a key partner in that, both in terms of the resources that we can provide to help that analysis happen and the information that we have through our database and the staff who we have that are very concerned and interested in moving the ball forward in that respect.
Senator, the issue that you raise is one of the ones that has been tangled with for quite a number of years now, ever since we've had Measure 66, because we've been constitutionally mandated to throw huge sums of money in this direction. But we're really just beginning to figure out how to measure whether it actually is accomplishing what we're hoping to have it accomplish. And part of what the director is talking about in the work that the agency's doing in conjunction with the Natural Resource Institute at Oregon State University is to try to have a portal where you can get in and take a look at all the data. Right now it's even very difficult to try to figure out what there is to look at because it's scattered in a number of different places in a number of different formats. And so this is an effort to bring the data not in a geographical sense all to one place, but to link it all together electronically and give it a common format so that you can look down through the layers of data and see what is known and what isn't known and target things much better than we've been doing. We really don't have a lot of empirical go-to right away and use type data about how effective the things that we've been doing on the ground are. But over the last couple of bienniums, we've been moving, I think, aggressively and successfully in the direction of trying to do that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. While we're going down this, as far as the performance of this department goes, you know, there's a whole bunch of other rules, laws, and restrictions, setbacks, shade, mixing zones, you can only work in the river X times, spill over the dam, all this stuff going on top of this. The one performance measure I get out of this department, and by the way, I don't think we'll ever be able to measure what this department really does as far as salmon habitat goes, because it's a needle in the haystack. $110 million after billions of dollars being spent by Bonneville Power, it's a needle in the haystack. My point is the performance measure, the one performance measure I see out of this is when I went out to Johnson Creek Watershed to plant trees with people, Johnson Creek Watershed starts in rural Clackamas County, goes right straight through the densest part of Oregon, and it goes from conservative rednecks out east of where I live, right by my house, into liberal hippies that go to Reed College. And we went out there. There are religious. There are real. I'm right in the middle. There's religious and atheistic zealots out there planting trees. Gays, straights, blacks, whites, gun owners, people of ethical treatment of animals, farmers that raise sheep and cattle. That's the performance measure I love about this. We're all there, one common goal: clean water, a better habitat for salmon. All that stuff, that's what I love about this. That's why I think this is a good investment. Because each and every one of them folks, whether they voted for Measure 30 or against it, for Measure 36 or against it, didn't matter. They were trying to strive to one thing, to better the state. That's why I think this is a good investment. And logging industry, people against logging, they're all out there putting their shoulder to the wheel. That's the benefit of this. We're never going to be able to measure whether this money is well spent or not. We don't even know if the billions of dollars that Bonneville Power has poured into saving salmon has made a dent, because it could be the ocean conditions. At the same time, we're catching, butchering, and consuming, and I'm guilty of it, tens of thousands of salmon every year. So I'm frustrated about these questions and our comments here when it comes to this department. But that's the one performance measure I like the best, and I don't think that's on the performance measures we have here. But forgive me for ranting, Madam Chair.
I thought PETA stood for people eating tasty animals.
That's a good one, too.
It did.
Senator Shields.
I have to say that's one of the best speeches my representative from Southeast Portland has done. He can rant all he wants when it's like that. But I do think he's making a good point. This is where we see all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds coming together to do good things.
It's true.
And you can continue to try and measure till the cows come home, and not get to what Representative Schaffler is talking about. That doesn't mean you cut off the money. The people of Oregon passed ballot measure 66 saying, hey, we want fish recovered. I mean, it wasn't complicated. They didn't have to think about all the stuff that the committee chair has to think about in how you measure whether that money that they've appropriated actually does what the people out there wanted it to do. That's the both the beauty and the craziness of the ballot measure. You know, they can just promote the big goal and let us figure out the minutia.
My point still is, I don't want us putting money in things that we don't know if they work or not, and we do want to put money in things that do work. And you have to find out what works and what doesn't work, and then put the money there. I'm not suggesting cutting off the money. I'm saying let's put it where it's most effective.
Well, and part of the problem is there's a lot of moving parts here. You got fish that go out to the ocean for years and then may come back or may not come back. You got years where there's a lot of rain and years where there's not a lot of rain. It's really hard to quantify.
A lot of factors, and we don't know much about it, but what I'm asking is, well, how are you measuring what you are doing? And it sounds to me like you're just kind of getting started figuring out what to do and how to do it. And even the federal government, after 3 or 4 years in the program, is saying, gosh, what should we be doing here?
But, you know, one of the encouraging thing is, one of the encouraging things is when you compare where Oregon is compared to the states around us, we have much better data than a lot of the other states. In fact, our data has bailed out states and helped them deal with issues that they've been facing.
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, just a couple of thoughts. We are making progress. Measuring it is difficult, though, and we do have more data than any other area. We've done more, in my view, in Oregon than any other state in the Northwest, perhaps in the Union, in terms of the contribution to recovery that we've done. And we've done it in a very unique way through the Oregon plan, which is not regulatory, it's incentive-based. One of the issues we struggle with, though, as a state, is it's great to have data, but you've got to spend the time and energy looking at it and analyzing it. And what we found through the Coastal Coho Project is that took a long time, and it wasn't cheap. And it kept people from doing some of the things that they would have done otherwise on their regular duties. So if we want to, I think we all want to be looking at these outcomes. We all want to make progress, and we all want to make sure that our investments are effective. But it takes time and energy and manpower to go down that path. And we're hoping that the budget that we've crafted through the governor's recommended budget helps us get better at that through our effectiveness monitoring position and through our database piece. In particular, those pieces will be very helpful in help us move the ball forward and be a better player and more constructive in moving that in that direction. But the data doesn't analyze itself, and so we need to continue to make these investments. And believe me, our biggest priority is to make sure that we're making these investments in a sound manner, and we continue to strive to make sure that we have sound priorities for the board, and that we are also continuing to learn from our actions on the ground as they occur. And that's a dynamic process, and we're going to go down some alleyways that may have a dead end, and we'll just keep plugging away on the ones that are bearing fruit. So it's a bit of an experiment in a lot of ways, both in terms of the complexity of the science, but also the social experiment in terms of bringing people together at a local level to solve problems. It's the beauty of the Oregon Plan, and OWEB is provides the funding and resources for those local groups to take charge and kind of control their own destiny, so to speak.
Thank you.
With that, then, I will adjourn the committee meeting, but before, or I guess what I'll do is close the hearing on House Bill 1574. Before I adjourn the meeting, committee members, tomorrow we'll have Deb Marriott from the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership and Nancy Molina from the IMST, and we will also take public testimony tomorrow. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 1527 as well, and we will close the hearing.
Joint Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee, 10th of May, 2005, Hearing Room 174, 8:30 a.m.